Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
We are approaching the 4th of July long weekend. I think most of us will take Friday the 5th off as well. And what studios usually do is, depending on what day of the week the 4th falls, they will release their blockbuster just before it so they can get that long weekend of ticket sales. And this year they're doing that with the latest Marvel franchise installment, Spider-Man: Far From Home, which is just on the heels of Endgame, which was just on the heels of Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. In counter programming, The Beatles. Yesterday, rom-com, romantic comedy, what if only one guy remembered The Beatles? What would he do with that? And yeah, that's really your choices this weekend.
Yeah, all you need is love.
Oh, that's
love,
nice.
Love.
And that's all Peter Parker wants to do. That's is right. Love. Thank you love. For the transition right there. Peter Parker, remember, he is just back from being nothing dust, along with 50% of the rest of the human beings on Earth. They came back at the end of Endgame. Sorry I had to say that, because you had better have seen that already.
Absolutely. I think it's very, very important to point out, and it's pointed out even at the beginning of the trailer for Spider-Man, Tom Holland comes on and says, you know, be aware, there are spoilers in this trailer. If you have not seen Endgame, go no further. And the same applies for the movie, for Spider-Man. If you have not seen Endgame, you need to, and you have any interest in the Marvel Universe, you absolutely need to see Endgame before you see Spider-Man: Far From Home.
Peter Parker wants to take a break. He's tired of being Spider-Man. He doesn't want to play superhero. He's still in high school. There's an explanation for why that is, even though it was 5 years ago for Homecoming. He wants to go on a summer trip with his classmates and to the Europe's major cities, Venice, London, Paris, Prague. And he wants to express his love, or his like for MJ, played by Zendaya. He's got plans. Eiffel Tower, necklace, the whole shebang. But superheroing and monsters are becoming a third wheel. Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson, shows up. He's dodging his phone calls. He doesn't want to fight monsters. But he has no choice. It follows him. It follows him to Europe. A big water monster comes out of Venice's canals. And all of a sudden, a new superhero shows up to fight it. Mysterio, Quentin Beck, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, says, "It's okay. I know these guys, these elementals, this water monster, dirt monster, fire monster. They're from my dimension," which means, oh man, there's a multiverse out there. They destroyed his planet, so now he's in our dimension to save our planet from the same elementals. Peter Parker doesn't care. He's got girls on the brain. All he can think about, like, the world is ending, and he can only think about his crush. But it's true, he doesn't want to play.
No, he cares, but he would prefer that he not have to play. But he never diverts from the fact that he always is aware of the responsibilities that come with the powers he has. He'd rather still be that friendly neighborhood Spider-Man from Queens. But you know what? When in Rome, so to speak. I don't think they hit Rome, but when in Venice, you know, he's called upon. Nick Fury tracks him down and says, "Look, dude, you know, Mysterio's here. That's all well and good. You got to help him out and help defeat these elementals." So it's like it starts with water, and there's fire, and I forgot what air is the other one.
I don't remember air showing up.
I think that was some sort of whirlwind looking tornado kind of thing. I'm not quite sure. But that's the whole the thing with elements is just that they're fighting these hyper elemental monsters, and so, you know, when Peter and his friends become among those in danger, he's going to have to step up to help save them, because one, they're his friends, and two, that it is just who he is, and that's part of the story that's been building ever since he was being mentored in the Avengers movies by our good friend, who I so miss, Iron Man / Tony Stark.
Peter feels he is not ready. Iron Man bequeathed kind of the Avengers leadership to him. Tony Stark is dead.
Oh, gosh, you got it. You just said that?
Captain America is 97 years old. Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is now identified to become the leader of the remaining Avengers. And he's not, he doesn't want to. He doesn't feel, not that he's worthy, he's just not ready. He's still like 17 years old.
Yeah, I think he's even 16.
Tony Stark left him these glasses that are interfaced with this hyper-intelligent artificial intelligence. You know, you can do whatever you want. You can control the world with these glasses. And he doesn't want them. He doesn't know what to do with them. He wants to go to the Eiffel Tower. He wants to kiss this girl. That's all he wants to do. And director John Watts, I think he owes a debt of gratitude to a familiar subgenre of comedy for European travel films. Think of the Griswolds in National Lampoon's European Vacation, and 2004's Eurotrip. There's some really funny scenes and one-liners in this film that harken back to those really famous European travel films. John Watts did Homecoming, and the two writers also return. They've done both Spider-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp. Mm-hmm. And he comes from Cop Car, 2015's indie film, which I just loved. And you know, he pulls this off okay, but where I'm going to stick Far From Home, where I'm going to rank it, is it's an also-ran. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's Thor the Dark World. It's not part of the main canon. It's an also-ran because it's so light. And you know what? Marvel fans, I guess, deserve a break from the forlorn, morose Infinity War in-game duo and even the more serious girl power Captain Marvel. This is the fans' summer vacation, too. There's a line that straight up encapsulates this movie. Peter yells, "I think Nick Fury just hijacked our summer vacation." That's exactly what this film is. It's a Marvel summer vacation. It's light, it's fluff, and it's forgettable.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's a very intentional choice. It's the same vibe as the Ant-Man franchise or the or Spider-Man Homecoming. And this movie, it's a sequel to both Homecoming and to Endgame. So it's kind of interesting that it's sort of they're just elements that are drawn from both of those films to kind of move the Marvel Cinematic Universe to keep it moving in the right direction, to keep it moving forward. People do like that. It's that trademark Marvel. It's got heart, it's got humor, it's got crazy action. I actually preferred this movie when the action wasn't so hyper intense with special effects and things. When you're getting the really humorous dialogue, and Jake Gyllenhaal's character's kind of got a nice little sarcastic streak going. And I just think that it's and the relationships, Peter's relationship with his friends and with his pursuit of MJ, it's totally a summer superhero movie. I'm a bit superhero fatigued, which is why I was not as overwhelmed in endorsing this one as I might have been a year ago, because I personally, it's really hard for me to watch because I miss Tony Stark. I miss Iron Man. And I miss Captain America. And so as this story, as this canon progresses, you're just reminded of what you're not going to get for quite a while, if ever. And so that to me was that summer superhero fatigue that had set in a little bit that kept me from enjoying this film as much as some others did around me. But it's still good. It's Marvel movies just know how to do it right, right down to the end credits that everybody knows they have to stick around to the bitter, bitter end for, because you're going to get that hint of what's to come. And all it does is just restart the clock, and it's like, get ready for the next one.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a bit of an age split on this. Younger people, and I mean high schoolers and beginning college, are really going to identify with Peter and understand where he's coming from. Those of us who've been around since the first Iron Man and, you know, 90s, 80s, that whole thing, We don't identify with Peter. I've moved on. I identify with Iron Man and why he didn't want to do what he did in Endgame because he had a child. Why Captain America did what he did and went back in time to live his life. You know, I identify with those guys. I don't identify with this child anymore. So while I laughed and I chuckled at some of the slapstick bits that actually occur and the really over-the-top mayhem with these major cities being torn apart, I'm not feeling this movie. I'm really ranking this down there with, like, the first Ant-Man. Like, it's not terrible, but it's not good.
It's good. It's not. It's still good. It's still good. It's just not... It's not special on the heels of just how big Endgame was.
It's a U-turn.
But then you think about how horrible Dark Phoenix was, comparatively speaking, just a few weeks ago. And it just sort of reminds... It's like, oh, thank goodness. This one certainly deserves a much higher ranking than that. I mean, when you think about it, this is the 23rd Marvel Cinematic Universe film in 20 years.
And
I mean,
kind of a misstep a little bit.
No, but so by 23, there's only so much you can really inject that's completely fresh. But you're right. You know, here he is, this high school teenager, and we related more, or I certainly related more to the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man and then even the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man because I was closer. I was still, you know, a little more in tune with what was happening in that in those particular eras.
And the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man trilogy took itself more seriously than Far From Home does, except maybe Spider-Man 3. That was just ridiculous.
Yeah. No, but so you're right in that I think we all kind of watch it slightly differently as we age. But this is for a new generation of people who didn't have those previous incarnations of Spider-Man to compare this to. And so I think when it's just looked at sort of in its own right, if you take away your memories of all the other Spider-Man movies and just look at this as this new era Spider-Man that's part of the MCU, then I think it does what it needs to do and is still very entertaining. I think Tom Holland is very good. And the thing that amazed me, and Jake Gyllenhaal is always just kind of intriguing to watch. I wasn't buying into him at first, but, you know, he's got versatility, so he can really amp up the humor and the pathos when he needs to. And so I still enjoyed it, and seeing it on IMAX is always, like, just sort of like, wow, you're immersed. But I don't think I could even go and rank the 23 because so many of them are...
No, but you can do general ranking. You can tier them. This isn't the lowest tier.
I think there's only two tiers. And to me, the first tier is your true Avengers films that ended with Endgame. And the other tier is all the others. And so to me, that's where the divide is.
We rank them so much differently. I'm talking first Iron Man, first Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor Ragnarok, like that tier.
Yeah, and I don't rank them that way.
You know, and then there's the lesser of quality films as they go on down. And there's like four or five per tier.
But they build off of each other. And that's what I love about the Marvel Universe is just that there is always just enough character development that progresses that makes you sort of feel like you're just in on it. You're tracking two decades of these story threads. And that's quite a feat. And the fact that Marvel, you know, that these particular films, I don't think any of them would be considered a dud. And so to have 23 films and none of them be a total dud is pretty remarkable.
Far From Home is not a dud. It's just not anything else. It's
it's worth seeing if you see the Marvel films.
Critic proof.
Yeah,
it's critic
proof. It is totally critic proof, but I also think it will add anybody who's ever gone on, whether it's a high school field trip, you know, two states over or abroad, or even anyone who's traveling abroad in any
sort
of...
Oh, come on. You can't say... I love how you try to make up who this is for. This is not for travelers.
No, but it's got a travelogue element.
If you're traveling
fun.
To Venice this summer, then this is the film for you.
No. It's more that if you have traveled to these places, it's fun to see them. I was just in Italy, so for me to see Venice being destroyed in the Bridge of Sighs that I'd just seen, you know, a month ago, being basically... you know, completely submerged by this water monster.
Venice is already wet.
Really
it
cool.
can't get much wetter.
But I think if you've been to any of these European places, it's just kind of fun to see them. It's integrated in a much better way than, you know, like Men in Black International, which hopped around the world for no reason whatsoever. This one was more organic, and it's a fun premise, and you have Homecoming, where I think they went on a school field trip to Washington, and then you have Far From Home, which, you know, they're going much further from home. But no matter, the point is that no matter where they go, Peter Parker is going to be shouldered with the responsibility that comes with potentially becoming a global superhero as opposed to a neighborhood superhero.
You're right. Tom Holland was good.
Okay.
So, we'll stop beating this.
I'll take that.
Yesterday, a romantic comedy from men who know romantic comedy. It was written by Richard Curtis. He wrote Notting Hill and Love Actually, probably
but
two
awesome,
of the
awesome.
Most genre-defining best romantic comedies
and
of
four,
all
and Four
time.
Weddings and a Funeral, which also is right up there.
And it was directed by Danny Boyle. He won an Oscar for Slumdog Millionaire. In fact, he won multiple Oscars, I believe, for Slumdog Millionaire. He did 28 Days Later. He did 127 Hours.
Trainspotting.
He says, I will never direct a film that another person could direct. And
has he really said that?
Yes, he did say that. It is an interview for this film. And why I'm giving him the buzzer is anybody could have directed Yesterday. Because while one half of it, I think, is fascinating and philosophical and existential, and I want to talk about the universality of music, the other half is the duddest of dud, fake, unbelievable, romantic comedy garbage I have ever seen.
That's because you're a huge fan of Lily James and probably can't see how this dude who is, that she's got feelings for doesn't recognize that she's head over heels, and two, doesn't act on it. And so I think that's where your believability factor, forget the fact that this guy wakes up and is the only one in the world who seems to know that the Beatles ever existed and has to bring their music to the world. The fact that his girlfriend, that his friend doesn't clue into his feelings, and he doesn't clue into hers. That's actually more preposterous than the general premise of this film.
Well, believability, you already have to dispute it. It already flew out the door. He's on his bicycle, and it's never explained. There's no reason for it. The entire world loses power. The entire world, and it never actually is mentioned again. And when power is restored, and he is recovering from being hit by a bus from all the darkness, the world is the same, except when he starts playing the song Yesterday, probably Paul McCartney's most famous song ever written, and he's written a few, that the people at his table, the friends at his table, are watery-eyed. They're mystified. When and where did you write this amazing song? He's like, what are you talking about? Paul McCartney wrote the song. Ringo, John Lennon. He's like, what are you talking? Oh, you must be one of these indie bands that you think everybody knows about. And so he runs to the Google machine. And you're right. There's no Beatles. There's Rolling Stones. There's all the other bands, but there's no Beatles. And thankfully, Jack Malik, played by Himesh Patel, is already a musician. He's a failing, struggling musician, but, he's your coffee house crooner who just writes not good songs. He's never going to get found, discovered, make any money. He remembers most of the famous songs, gets the melodies down, gets the lyrics down. He's like, you know what? This is going to make me famous. On one hand, he's not really doing it out of altruism. Like, the world needs these songs. I will give them to him. No, he wants to get some pocket change out of it.
Oh, see, I didn't see that at all.
First.
Yeah.
He wants fame.
He wants fame, but he also just knows that these are amazing songs.
That he can exploit.
I don't see him ever feeling that he's exploiting
them. About when his new manager, played by a lovely comedic Kate McKinnon, says, "You have to tell me you want the golden chalice."
Yes, but he's never committed to that greed. And there's always from the very beginning, a crisis of consciousness and crisis of conscience in what he's doing. And so I completely disagree. I think it has that, it does have the British sensibility. It's kind of plods along and is very often witty, but there's no spike in drama. There is no huge character turn for me. And that's what kind of kept it just sort of flat the whole way through. So while it had moments of brilliance and inspiration, and all the actors are good, and Jack Malik's a good singer, I never felt any sort of shift in emotion throughout the entire 2 hours, which to me was its biggest drawback, because it could and should have somehow been elevated into something a little more brilliant. That is probably what Danny Boyle thought he would achieve in directing this. I think he heard the premise. I think he was blown away by it. It was such an interesting concept. But in the end, it turned into what was in general a pretty standard romantic dramedy that just happens to have this interesting sort of fantastical alternate universe kind of twist to it.
And it's so frustrating because it did not have to be flat. Pardon the musical pun. The ideas there are fascinating. If he sits down at a piano and belts out Let It Be for the first time anyone's ever heard it, is it still Let It Be? Will they people pay it the due respect? No, it's a new song from a guy nobody already likes. Does Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields Forever have any meaning whatsoever when taken outside of Liverpool and played in Hollywood? Ed Sheeran, who shows up as a version of Ed Sheeran, thinks he's helping Jack when he says, hey, Jude is really old-fashioned. How about you here it is. Change it to Hey, Dude. And that's when they get into stuff like that, this really could have been something. But a full 50% of this film is Himesh Patel and Lily James in a will-they-or-won't-they substandard, not even average romantic situation, substandard. She finally says, I've loved you since we were 14, and he's like, oh, I kind of know, but, you know, feelings and da-da-da-da-da. And this is his first film, and I think he does an admirable job. Everyone in Britain knows him because EastEnders, which is very famous for you Americans over there, and he can sing. I've been listening to the soundtrack all week. I like these versions of the songs, Hey Jude, Yesterday, Help. There's like a punk version of Help. He's very good.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's just it. He's very talented. And Lily James, we know, is incredibly talented. I mean, we saw her in Baby Driver, but the vibe that you got in Baby Driver between Lily James and
Ansel Elgort. I can't believe you brought up Baby Driver. I thought you were going to talk about Mamma Mia.
Well, and then there's Mamma Mia, where she was the younger version of the Meryl Streep character. So we know Lily James can sing too, but is not called upon to sing at all in this film.
She gets the harmony on I Want to Hold Your
Hand. Yeah, not quite the same. But I think there is that it might have impacted. They had that tough call of, can you find an actor who can sing or a singer who can act? Or do you find, he was sort of that best combination. But I'm not sure she was then the right person to put into the love interest role, considering who they had chosen.
She belongs in Notting Hill and Love Actually.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think she belongs in Yesterday.
Yeah, I think that actually, as much as I really like Lily James and respect her talents, I'm not sure that the casting really scored for this particular film. Definitely a great premise. And I got to tell you, I thought Ed Sheeran was spot on as Ed Sheeran. Because
good on him.
Good on him. But it showed that he's got some timing and acting ability. And he has some of the funniest lines and moments in this film, because here's Ed Sheeran, who is himself this British singer-songwriter at the top of his game, and he's recognizing in the stuff that Jack is singing that there is some brilliance there and that these lyrics are amazing. And he does respect the lyrics and the songs. And there's a great little songwriting sort of battle that they, you know, instant songwriting contest that they engage in. And as soon as Jack starts with another Beatles tune, you know, Ed Sheeran just basically calls uncle because it's like, I can't compete with this.
It's a wonderful idea because no one really, the average person isn't hearing the Beatles songs as Jack is singing them. But Ed Sheeran recognizes immediately a fellow song man. And they play it a little bit. He even recognizes it when he concedes defeat in the song contest. He says, I am Salieri. And a wonderful illusion for people who recognize that, because what's weird is I didn't recognize that the world considered Ed Sheeran, you know, this decade's greatest songwriter. Is he?
I mean, I don't know if I'd call him the greatest, but he's certainly one of Britain's.
Because that's how treats him.
And I'm not terribly surprised. I mean,
he's 2019's Paul McCartney.
There is already an amazing wax figure of him at Madame Tussauds in London that is just absolutely right on target. And you take a picture with him with his guitar and you feel like you've got a picture with Ed Sheeran. And so he is certainly right up there for the modern, for the current, you know, set of music lovers. And he's, you know, he's just a really great choice. He does this really well. But I heard that he got the role because Chris Martin, they wanted Chris Martin from Coldplay.
And it was written for Coldplay.
And Chris Martin did not want to do it. And Ed Sheeran stepped in. And I can kind of see it having gone either way. I can sort of see Chris Martin having pulled it off to some degree. But
It would have felt different because Chris Martin is 20 years older.
Yeah, it would have felt different. But so I think they're very fortunate that Ed Sheeran was really able to step up and make the most of that role. Kate McKinnon was a little cartoonish in her portrayal of this very greedy, you know, Hollywood manager.
I think she was supposed to play an archetype.
Yeah, no, she does. And so she does it very well. That is who she's playing. And she's funny. She's a scene stealer once in a while in her films. But that's also where I think it becomes very apparent that that Jack is torn. And it is very intriguing to see how, whether it's not just the music itself fits into the current context, whether how the marketing of the Beatles would be different. There's a really funny scene about the White Album, and some marketing guy is like, you know, it obviously it has some diversity issues, and you're just like, yeah, you know, you just don't even know what's gonna pop up as a current problem that in the 60s and 70s really was, you know, just not considered as critical to a band's success. And so the whole image makeover idea and the songs themselves, it's almost like you are hearing them for the first time. And it makes you think about what it must be like for what it was like when people did hear these songs for the very first time. So I think for the Beatles music fans too, it's really kind of a fun way to revisit their music. And you realize, oh my goodness, how many songs they wrote and how good they were.
They had to pick and choose what to put in this film. And I think they chose okay. And they chose mostly famous ones. There's not really a B-side on there.
But there were plenty of famous ones that aren't in there that people might wonder about.
Huge.
But that's because they really did need them to fit the story. And so I think this is one of those perfect films to like watch on an airplane or watch watch streaming. I don't think it necessarily has to be seen in the theater, but it's a good alternate viewing option.
Let's see
option
who you invent this for.
For
people
July 4th.
That really wondered what it is like if there were no Beatles.
No, July 4th. But I think for the whole notion of what's opening on July 4th, if you're not into going to some huge superhero film or a horror movie, then yesterday, it's a pleasing
No, it's not. Film. Half of it is pleasing. Half of it is very unpleasing.
No, none of it was unpleasing. It just was...
Really? That yeah. relationship pleased you?
No, it just
Well, then
was...
it's unpleasing.
I don't think it's not as black and white as pleasing or unpleasing.
It's unpleasing.
It was just... It just sort of is, and it just needed some kind of spike in drama.
One day on this podcast, you're actually going to take a stand on something.
Fine
for the airplane.
My stand is against
one
you.
One day.
My stand is against
I will be there to hear
my
it.
My stand is against your insistence on taking a stand when there doesn't have to be
you
one.
You are a critic. Criticize.
I am criticizing the fact that this film is not It's not a memorable. Do you talk about memorable and how you didn't think the Spider-Man one is memorable?
This movie is more memorable than Spider-Man.
I don't think so at all.
Absolutely.
I remember
this is the Beatles movie.
That's all you'll remember it as.
Oh, I'll remember the songs too.
But the songs, all it took, if somebody had just played the songs for me anyway, I'd remember the Beatles songs.
No, the whole fact that one guy remembers the Beatles and what he chooses to do with that is far more intriguing than any water monster you will find in Venice.
I think it depends on what type of film you like. And so I think if you're a BBC rom-com kind of viewer, then this is going to be... a decent enough choice, but I don't think it's, I won't remember yesterday tomorrow.
Speaking of what movies you may like, these are not the only two films in cinema on this long 4th of July scorching weekend where you may want to sneak away out of the sun from getting sunburned and into a dark theater for 2 hours. Annabelle Comes Home, the third installment in the Conjuring franchise, and the sixth installment in that entire franchise, is also out. I've never seen an Annabelle. I guess it's about a doll that kills people, so if you need your horror fix, that should make money this weekend.
I love the Conjuring movies, but since this is not considered a sequel to the Conjuring 1 and Conjuring 2, the Annabelle movies are not anything that have particularly intrigued me, and I'm not a huge horror fan, but I've heard kind of mixed feelings on
it. Actually has a fresher tomato than yesterday.
Because horror has a built-in base.
This is critics though.
Yeah, but there are a lot of critics who love their horror
and
movies.
I can see that because I gave yesterday a Rotten Tomato as well. So Aladdin's still there, you mentioned. Toy Story 4, Secret Life of Pets 2. A lot of choices for the kids this weekend.
And again, I would really, really urge anyone who's thinking of seeing Endgame and hasn't to go and look for that before it disappears from the big screen, because it's worth seeing on the big screen and is critical to see before Spider-Man Far From Home.
Well, it's got a quick re-release. They're releasing it in almost another 1,000 theaters.
Yeah, and that's
weekend.
Why, because there's no way.
That's not why. I thought they were releasing it to finally catch Avatar.
Boy, talk about greedy motivations. But I think it makes sense to make sure that people do have that option to see it before they see Spider-Man.
Anything else before we wrap up?
No, I would just say that, because there are so many things releasing a little on the early side, we'll do a special edition of the Cinema Clash next week, over the real July 4th weekend, I suppose, about documentaries, because we have not had a chance to dig into a recap of what went on last week with the AFI Documentary Festival. And there's a really good documentary that's supposed to be coming out in the next week called Maiden, which is about a all-female sailing team that did a race around the world. And so we'll talk about that and a documentary about John DeLorean that you may or may not see before next week. That's kind of interesting, very different. And
I think our audience just actually heard that eye roll.
Charlie's eye roll, but it's fascinating because it's a documentary that has recreations that feature Alec Baldwin and Josh Charles. I mean, really, kind of, it's very different.
The Josh Charles?
I love Josh Charles. He's a Baltimore boy. So we'll dive into documentaries next week.
Quick recap, Spider-Man : Far From Home is a complete U-turn from the seriousness of Infinity War and Endgame. It's light. In fact, it's too light.
Oh, I don't think it's too light, but I am a little fatigued by superheroes, so I think it's good. It's not great.
Yesterday is such a wonderful idea. To be able to swim in that and explore it would have been amazing, but I ran into a terrible, terrible romance.
It is a great idea. I do wish that that there'd been a little more believability in the romance department. But in terms of counter programming, it's really your only option, alternative, if you're going to the theater to find some sort of romantic drama to see.
Therefore, on behalf of the Cinema Clash, thank you very much for listening. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.